All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are talking about David Lowery's The Green Knight. This was one of our most anticipated films of last year and, of course, was delayed due to the pandemic. You know we love A24 films around here. And I am really happy to finally be getting to it and talking about this movie. This turned out really awesome. We have two guests for this episode, both awards winners at this year's Cyber Shorts Film Festival, which you guys heard Daryl Armstrong was here on the podcast a little while back for the episode on The Empty Man. He is one of the co-founders of the Cyber Shorts Film Festival, and he had asked me if I could maybe have some of their awards winners come join me on the show, and it all worked out really well. We have Ian Ebright and Sina Dalati. Ian won Best Director for his film The Devil Needs a Fix, and Sina won Best Screenplay for Terminal Love. And the two of them join me to talk puzzle pieces about The Green Knight. So that is coming up here in a second. Before we do get to that, I want to remind you all, as always, to make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts. You can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser or Good Pods or wherever there's ratings and reviews for podcasts. That's awesome, too. Make sure you share the show. Follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. And with that said, we got a nice long conversation, lots of cool puzzle pieces to get into. So let's get to the conversation on The Green Knight. All right, so I'm here with Ian Ebright and Sina Dalati, two filmmakers who are going to talk about The Green Knight with me today. But before we do get into all that Arthurian legend and all the crazy stuff that happens in this movie, guys, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us, David.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. Daryl Armstrong from the Cyber Shorts Film Festival, who has been here on Piecing It Together before for an episode, he suggested having you guys because you were both awards winners at this most recent entry of the Cyber Shorts Film Festival. So since it's both of your first times here on the show, I'm going to start with Ian and then we'll go on to Sina, but I'd like to have you both introduce yourselves to our audience here and tell us a little about you and your film. So Ian, tell us a little about your film and about yourself as a filmmaker.
Cool. My name's Ian Ebright. I wrote and directed my second short film, which was called The Devil Needs a Fix, that ended up winning an award at Cyber Shorts this year, which was very cool. And it is my version, which is I always kind of do a minimalist approach. I say always, having made two short films, which is the wrong word for only having made two. But let's say twice. And with the current short film I'm about to shoot, I kind of do a minimalist approach. And this is my minimalist approach to like a dystopian thing that's inspired by a little C.S. Lewis. I'm a little nervous to say this because I feel like this next example is going to be one of yours for the film, but Under the Skin and early David Mamet, House of Games. And it's about a very blasé reporter who is about to get his big break if his interview with the devil goes as planned. And, you know, from his gray wardrobe to the gray kind of color palette of the film, it's commenting ultimately, hopefully, if I wrote it well, on, you know, his this protagonist's inability to quote unquote either sin, you know, either give in to the temptation or to either love. And in that way, it's kind of like this dystopian hell that he's created for himself. So that I don't really think gives anything away, but more explains about, you know, our intent behind it based on the references we were pulling from. And yeah, we shot it up in Seattle with local crew and some friends from LA, and I'm glad to see it still finding a life out there.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love getting puzzle pieces in an introduction of a co-host here on the show. That's fun. That's a first. Sina, why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners here?
I'm Sina Dalati. I am a writer, director from Toronto. I sort of dabble in between narrative, music videos. I've started doing some commercial work and also virtual reality, which is funny because I was trying to submit a 360 VR short film and I was searching for VR festivals, which is how I found Cyber Shorts, because I thought it was a festival for VR films, but it turned out to be a festival for, you know, 2D films in VR. So I'm like, oh, this is cool. I'll submit my most recent short film that I had released, which was Terminal Love at the time. That film, we actually shot it in 2018, actually. And then did a sort of like a modest festival run with it. And then it was released in 2020. So when I found Cyber Shorts, I thought it'd be sort of the last festival that'll play out, probably. It's already available online.
Yeah.
But yeah, the film is, it's a very simple sort of storyline. 10-minute real-time conversation between this boy and a girl, and as we learn more about what they're talking about, we learn that it's, you know, been going out for a while, but it's not going to work out. And then there is a very Tarantino-esque twist at the end, which I won't spoil for potential audiences of this podcast.
For
sure. But yeah, it's sort of this surreal romantic dark comedy is what I would call it, and it was sort of a way, honestly, for me to sort of laugh at, you know, my own insecurities at the time of like being young and, you know, going through your first relationships and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I thought I'll just explore this very simple scenario with a sort of a dark lens of a dark humor.
Sure.
And yeah.
Very cool. You know, before we get into The Green Knight, I do just want to ask you both quickly about the Cyber Shorts Film Festival and just what that was like for each of you. Just, you know, the whole process, like you said, you know, it not actually being a VR film festival, but a film festival in VR. I had a music video that played there, not this past year, but the year before. And, you know, I certainly had a fun time. It was a very unique experience. So I was just wondering if each of you could talk on that for a minute. Ian, you first.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I like have to admit that like VR is not on my radar at all.
Uh-huh.
Like, being the married guy with two kids, you know, they, your kids create a filter of what you have remaining time for, and VR has not been. But again, my producer, one of the producers on my upcoming short film, Kelly, is deep into VR, and we've gotten really close. And so it was always kind of like inching closer, and it was a really cool first experience, which is probably like kind of pathetic to admit, but it was a cool first experience with VR. And I don't know if Altspace is like, you know, that was the platform. I thought the whole thing was really like kind of cool though. But again, I'm relatively new going into it. So I was a little like surprised and delighted, like, oh, this is what it's about.
Sure. Sure.
And,
yeah.
And I actually thought it was kind of cool, you know, more to the point, less about the technology, but I don't know. It was kind of fun interacting differently. You know, there's obviously like festivals that have been forced to go remote with COVID, yada, yada, but one that leans into it so explicitly and has a different kind of interaction just kind of felt nice, you know, like of the moment. Although they're obviously hoping to, you know, it's been running since before the pandemic and will continue after, but it was nice to like congregate and hang out in that space.
Sure.
So I liked it.
Absolutely. What about you, Sina? You're more involved with 360 video, you said, and VR type stuff. What did you think of the fest?
Yeah, so actually, because of work I do, I own VR headsets. So, and I've tried out some Altspace events and whatnot. So when I found out about the festival, I thought, you know, that's pretty cool that, you know, I might actually have the chance to have my work shown at a VR meeting. And Ian, you said you're based in LA, is that right?
I'm in Vegas, actually.
You're in Vegas.
Sorry for the misunderstanding, Sina. I'm in Seattle, but
Seattle. Had sorry.
Cast and crew, or crew in that instance, from cast and crew from LA. Yeah.
How was the lockdown? Because it was like, I think the festival was May 1st, but how was the lockdown around then for you guys? Like, were theaters open at all, or
that was right when things were opening here?
I think the same is true. For us. And again, you know, I live about 5 minutes outside the city. We're in a little bit of a bubble where, you know, I work remotely. So I've been less finger on the pulse of open and close because our life kind of runs in this bubble anyway.
Right.
But that was about when we started opening up as well.
Okay. Yeah, because for us in Toronto, we basically had like complete lockdown since December until like mid-June. And we had theaters open just about 2-3 weeks ago. So like having a virtual event in VR May 1st was like the most exciting thing that was like, happening at the time. Like there really honestly wasn't anything going on. So it was cool to be able to actually meet people virtually. I invited a few friends. It was really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that is, you know, that's kind of the thing that makes film festivals exciting. I mean, the films are great. It's always great to discover new filmmakers and all that. But as a filmmaker, it's like you really want to mingle and chat with people. And, you know, the online film festival doesn't always have that opportunity. But this, in a unique way, really does kind of bring that back.
Absolutely.
Definitely, yeah. It was the best time for a VR event, I'd say.
Absolutely.
Right.
So, yeah, let's start talking about The Green Knight. You know, first question, and then we'll start getting into some puzzle pieces. But again, we'll start Ian and go to Sina here. But was this a big one on your, like, must-see list? Like, as obviously, this is something that's been delayed for a long time, what with the pandemic and everything. But is this something you had been kind of waiting for?
No.
Okay.
And I'm so ashamed to say that because it's... You know, I won't like telegraph where I'm going on the film, and we'll all talk about it. But it's exactly the kind of film that I would have anticipated.
Sure.
Another producer on my upcoming short, Chris Graham, loves David Lowery, the director, and was like, "Hey, are you? You know, basically asked me the same question. Are you, you know, going to check this out?" And I was like, "What? What film? What
right.
director?" And you could just hear the like disappointed silence on the other end of the line, where he's like. You don't know David Lowery, so I'm, I guess, even worse than with the VR anecdote, like, coming in, like, really, really pedestrian on this.
It's okay to be a busy guy and just, yeah. you don't always catch these things at a time, you know?
Well, and now, having seen it, like, you know, I'm like, okay, I see what people, I see why this was anticipated, but we'll get into that.
Absolutely. What about you, Sina?
It actually was at the time when they announced it first. I don't know how familiar you guys are with just the general A24 like slate of films.
But I'm a full-on fanboy over here, so.
Oh yeah, like there is, you know, the Facebook group by any chance, the A24.
Yeah, which is actually based in Las Vegas, surprisingly. But
oh, is it okay? Yeah.
Yeah.
At some point I joined that group. Like I Ari Aster movies or what's the guy? The guy who made The Lighthouse. His name
Robert Eggers.
Robert Eggers, yeah. I really like the movie, so I'm like, oh, let me just join this A24 group. And then there is so many people just
it's ridiculous.
Obsessing over any A24 movie. So I was kind of hyped, but I will say this: I will like generally I try not to watch trailers if I know I'm definitely gonna watch a movie. So I didn't even go into it knowing much about it. And anything that's medieval themed in any way. Is so far from my, you know, just knowledge and taste in movies. So it was a really different sort of film. So, and you might kind of get that sense in my puzzle pieces too, but.
I was going to say, like, that's a really good setup, but David, I'm not going to, don't let me take the host mic from you, but.
No, go ahead.
Like, we can't sidestep A24 much longer. Like, I feel like. Our puzzle pieces are going to run pretty hot and heavy in the A24 realm.
Sure.
At least mine were. I was like, oh, because the examples came really quick. And then after that, I'm like, I got a couple more. But anyway, it was like, it's a very A24 film.
It is. And I've been finding that a lot lately. We recently did an episode on Zola. And that's a film where almost half of our puzzle pieces were like, cannibalizing the A24, you know, filmography. And so it's an interesting, I guess, time in filmmaking at the moment. But, you know, we're talking about pieces. Let's start getting into some of them. We'll get into a lot of what The Green Knight is and what it has to say and a lot of the filmmaking along the way. But let's start jumping into some of those pieces. We'll go around in a circle here. Ian first, Sina second, and then me third. Ian, what do you have for your first puzzle piece here?
I mean, the witch is like so on the nose.
It so works, though.
Yeah, it does work. So I was like, okay, I want to sound like the smart filmmaker, but I'm going to cheat. So I go to IMDb before this. And I'm like, oh, I thought that Kate Dickey, the actor who plays the queen, I thought she was in Midsommar, but she's in The Witch. And so there's that, you know, obvious bit of casting that she, you know, it has a pivotal role in The Witch and in this film. And then I know it's a little like dopey to say, you know, because a lot of the setting has to do with like forests and things, but particularly the way there's something about like the A24 aesthetic and the way that he captures the forest all the way down to like spells and the symmetry of the production design and even just like the arrangement of sticks. Mm-hmm. I won't say, but there's two films in particular that I know for sure you both are, I think you each are going to share the second one and The Witch that were like screaming frequently throughout the film. And at one point I was like, I don't know, is this like, I hear you say it worked and it does, like A24 films are real, have a really strong POV and are gorgeous for sure. This was the first time like I kind of wondered if the homage was a little too strong, because I caught myself thinking about it being a little too prevalent rather than being immersed in the story. And there's a lot to be immersed in.
Interesting.
So it was on the line for me. It didn't like take me out of it, but my first two of three puzzle pieces were like so loud throughout the viewing that I was like, it felt a little strong.
Right. It's like we get what you're doing. What you're doing.
It's like hey man, if I ever directed something for A24, I would want to telegraph that I'm in that collection as well. So like I don't blame him, but the director has enough of a POV that, you know, it's all subjective. One person's it worked as another person's it was a little much. But it definitely wasn't so strong that it derailed anything for me.
I would throw in there also a lot of the like the artwork, the texts, things like that, where, you know, a lot of that was also very much in that that line. And then also you mentioned one cast member, but also Ralph Ineson was in The Witch. He plays the Green Knight here. Yeah. Joel Edgerton was in Comes at Night. Alicia Vikander is in Ex Machina. So yeah, we got a lot of these cast members. Barry Keoghan, the scavenger character, he was in that really weird one with the spaghetti. Whatever that's called.
Yeah, this movie's definitely got the A24 vibes. You know?
Yes, yeah. Lots of vibes.
There's this whole conflict going on in the group. It's like all these people, it's like, oh, this thing's got the A24 vibes. And then there's this whole other group that's like, stop using that word.
Yes. Yeah, but they're very prevalent here for sure. But Sina, what do you got for your first piece?
Sorry, Ian, you said The Witch, and what was the other one?
Well, I didn't say it yet because I think we're all going to choose it. But and David teed it up really well when he started talking about like the typography and some of the scripting. And it's like, very strong.
We'll get there, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think it's coming out.
Okay, well, I got a few that are maybe more sort of unknown ones. I wouldn't necessarily say they were influences, but they're kind of, that's what reminded me, and there's parallels and it might be more talking points. Mm-hmm. But there is this, it just came to me today. So I'm Iranian, and there is this Iranian folktale called Hassan Kechal, which means Hassan the bald. For some reason he's bald and he has this, that's sort of his defining characteristic. And there's actually a movie called Hassan the Bald from 1970 by Ali Hatemi, that's the director. And the reason I was thinking of this folktale and this movie was that at the core of it, The Green Knight, one way you look at it was it's a coming of age movie, right? It's sort of this young man getting out of his cocoon and becoming an adult, right? And learning what it's like to sort of get tested by these virtues and then make a decision by the end of it. And what happens in Hassan Kechal is this guy who sort of has very childlike features. He's a very lazy guy and he never leaves the house. And what his mother does is she leaves a trail of apples. So Hassan loves apples.
Yeah.
Leaves a trail of apples, like maybe 100 apples. It's very ridiculous, but just from in the yard of their house to the street. And Hassan just follows the apples. And eventually, by the time he gets outside the house, his mother just closes the door and kind of puts him out into the world. And I got reminded of that for this parallel to our protagonist in The Green Knight and his pursuit of knighthood.
Yeah.
And how Hassan kind of goes into the world. He meets all these characters. He faces love. And it's actually the first Iranian musical, as far as that's known. he meets a poet, and there is this parallel of like him chasing more apples and how they're considered sins, which he kind of overcomes by the end of it. But anyways, not to get too deep into it, but I'm curious to hear if there are any other folk tales that you guys know of that might be parallel to the Green Knight story.
Sure. Yeah. I'm going to have one actually up next, but before we do get to that, I'm just curious, this Hassan the Bald, I hadn't heard of it. Is the film adaptation of it good? Do you enjoy that movie?
So I was actually kind of rewatching some parts of it today. I don't think I've seen it since childhood. It's mm-hmm. just a very distant thing that randomly popped in my head, but it's on YouTube. The full thing is on YouTube. I can send it to you if you're curious.
Cool.
I don't think there are subtitles, but you can sort of, it's a very visual sort of film.
Sure.
But the music and everything, it's definitely like very unique.
Yeah. It sounds really cool. And I could totally see how that story, you know, definitely parallels a lot of what Gawain goes through in his, you know, his trials and tribulations to become a knight. So I could definitely see where that parallel comes from.
Yeah.
Ian, do you have anything on that?
No, I like that. I like your description scene of the coming of age. It's funny. I don't know why that didn't occur to me, but now that you say that, that makes, it really is, it really does have that component.
Yeah.
And kind absolutely. Of that sense of like, you know, you cross a point where you can't go back, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the tests in the film are kind of those moments of like before and after, you know, whether the protagonist succeeds or not, it's like, well, you can never go back to that innocence or that previous time or whatever, which is kind of a hallmark of coming of age. So that makes so much sense now that you say it.
Well, speaking of folktales and coming of age stories, my first puzzle piece, of course, I was also thinking of The Witch, like you already brought up, but another movie where The Witch actually was a puzzle piece for when we did the episode about a year and a half ago, I want to say, Gretel and Hansel from Oz Perkins. I don't know if either of you guys have seen that one, but it very much feels like, you know, what if we took that kind of A24 vibe, to bring that up again, take that and you know, apply it to this classic children's story and turn it weirder, turn it darker, which a lot of these children's stories already are very dark to begin with when you think about them, but make them even darker and also focus on some just incredible cinematography, fantastic score, just all of the technical details, just really, really just going for it with all those things. But then like bringing it back to the story and the folktale of it, I mean, it really is, you know, like we were just talking about there, like a coming of age story here, and you know, kind of coming into your own as you go through this journey. And in a lot of ways, that's what's happening with Gretel and Hansel, where the you know, focus has shifted more to Gretel and her story. And along with that, another parallel that to me I found was just the way that along that journey, she encounters all these people, and really nobody is kind of trustworthy along the way. And they all have something that need to keep her on her toes, in the same way that Gawain has to stay on his toes at all times, because everybody's either trying to kill him or take from him or just send him on the wrong path along, you know, his journeys. And so I just feel like there's a lot of parallels between the two movies, mm-hmm. even though Gretel and Hansel is pretty recent. And, you know, I'm sure that this movie, you know, with all the technical aspects of it, was probably already in development for a while at this point. But still, I think it's a good, you know, comparison to make here.
Right. What did you guys think of? I haven't seen that movie, but I'm curious. What did you guys think of the fox's character as the sort of spirit guy? Because I forgot to mention, but in Hassan Ketchel, there is this figure that appears that mm-hmm. is his almost like lookalike in a different form, and sort of a spirit guide. I'm like, that's literally the fox's character.
Mm. I thought that was really cool. Yeah, I kind of honestly wish there was more of that, to be honest.
Yeah, that was really, I think that was the most interesting element in the movie for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it too. There's some reference that, like, I'm gonna get after we end this, that's like obvious and just waiting, but because there's a lot of movies that do that. But I like that component of it. I mean, normally when there's a movie that people really get into and like if for some reason I don't get into it and their response is like, it's just the kind of movie where you just got to kind of go with it.
Mm-hmm.
I find that like supremely irritating. However, I mean, and I think there's more going for this film than that. But I also felt with the example of like the fox as a spirit guide, like it's one of the good examples of like, I thought the director did a really good job of like creating a experience that you just went along with.
Yeah.
So anybody who would sort of overthink this, I think the theme's pretty clear, but if for some reason they kind of skidded out on the whole thing, I'd be like, but it's just kind of this immersive thing that you follow with the character.
Yeah.
So I'm violating my own rules, but it was a good example of that. And the fox, the little visuals that he used to move it along, I thought were really effective.
Yeah, definitely. All right, well, let's move on to another piece. Ian, what do you have for your next piece?
Well, I'm not going to go back to A24 because that's, you know, I think, you know, I mean, maybe I will my last one if you guys don't go for that. There's, you know, I don't, on this one, I'm kind of thinking of like more kind of classic literature and not knowing when this source material was written.
Mm-hmm.
I kept thinking of, I mean, just as a filmmaker, Terry Gilliam, and obviously he's done Don Quixote and has tried to do it, you know, at other times famously, which I think most people would agree is even more interesting than the finished film.
Sure.
But I was really thinking of like the kind of the classic stories. I don't know if they're quite fables, but Don Quixote, and I'm just going to put them together because they're kind of like Odyssey movies, the other or stories, the other literally being the Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, you know, when the protagonist reaches the castle and there's sort of that like temptation scene that unfolds. That really, really reminded me of like the sirens in the Odyssey.
Yes.
You know, where it's like, you know, I don't remember the rules of that, but it's something about, you know, if you lock gaze with them, you're toast, you know, they'll sort of lure you in.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked the seductive way that he kind of built that temptation in that scene. And that was the moment that really reminded me of that. You know, like these, one of you had said previously, like it's the journey where you can't really trust the intentions of
yes.
the people you meet along the way, which makes me think of another puzzle piece, but I've already given two, so I'll pause there. But definitely like those classic stories, Don Quixote and the Odyssey, felt more apparent as it went on.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that brings up a good question. We haven't really mentioned it. I mean, Sana, you said you're not really that big into like the medieval type films and stuff like that. But were any of you like King Arthur people? Like, because I personally am not. Like, I'm sure I saw like Excalibur could definitely be a puzzle piece on our list. I don't know if I'm just robbing that from either of you guys. I haven't seen it, though, since I was like 13, maybe. You know, it's been so long. I haven't seen really anything other than that Guy Ritchie movie that came out like 5-6 years ago. I haven't seen any King Arthur stuff in forever. Are either of you big fans of that stuff?
No, I had the same experience you did where like at one point in the movie, it reminded me of Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, like the Kevin Costner kind of half successful, half hacky movie of the 90s.
Sure.
And then I was like, well, the only reason I'm thinking of that is because I don't watch stuff like this. So that's right. Kind of like the last reference I would pull from, because, you know, typically I would steer clear of that period.
Sure.
Yeah, same for me. Honestly, I kind of forgot that it has anything to do with it until after the movie. I'm like, oh, okay.
It's like, oh, yeah, that is King Arthur, isn't it?
Like, the only familiarity I have with it is the whole story of the sword. And
yeah. That's funny. When I got home from the theater, my wife asked me if Guinevere was in it, and I was like, I think so. Like, you know, I couldn't even really quite remember. But right on. Let's move on to another puzzle piece here. Sina, what do you have for your second one?
So this one, I actually do want to go back to 824.
Mm-hmm.
More as a discussion point to kind of discuss another thing. But the second Ari Aster movie, how do you say it? Is it Midsommar or Midsommar?
Midsommar. Yeah.
Midsommar?
Yeah.
Okay. Midsommar. Because in terms of its pacing and structure, it definitely reminded me of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of what I've heard from about The Green Knight in terms of like reviews and feedback was, if you kind of go into it expecting this sort of epic adventure action movie, you'll be disappointed. But for what it is as a visual poem, it's exactly that. It's a very poetic movie.
Yeah.
With a fairly loose structure, very simple storyline, but a lot of elements that carry a lot of symbolism, a lot of poetic weight, even with Midsommar, this sort of the wave-like structure of the characters, like being in a state of hallucination and what's reality, and then reaching this sort of end goal at the end with the protagonist in Midsommar. I felt that very similar with Green Knight, about how he's hallucinating a lot in the movie,
mm-hmm.
and like seeing his own dead body, I think, a few times, or like when the fox starts talking to him.
Yeah.
Or like seeing the giants, for example. I don't know. Like, it's, I don't know if they're necessarily like real elements in the world.
Right, right.
But yeah, I feel like I was thinking of other films that are more, I guess, visual poems.
Yeah.
But the only thing that came to me for more recent examples is Midsommar. I don't know if you guys have anything else in mind that have this sort of loose structure.
That was the one I was betting more than one of us, including sure. me, was going to say, yeah. And actually, it's funny. I like what you're saying, Sina, of the way that they unfold similarly. And for me, it was more of like just a production design thing.
Right.
Where I'm like, did they hire the same, like, I mean, almost the person that did like the paintings and stuff. It was just such a...
Yes.
And I think you'd mentioned, David, like kind of the scripting and things. It felt so... that's also gets to my third thing, but there's like a real Nordic... which Midsommar obviously has. And this one felt like it drew from also.
Yeah.
Sort of like this Nordic sensibility in the soundtrack and a lot of the production design.
Sure.
So that to me, yeah, I thought of Midsommar for those reasons.
I would say one other comparison with Midsommar is I feel like a lot of movies nowadays have been quite sexless. And these are two movies, both The Green Knight and Midsommar, that absolutely do not shy away from sex and things around sex. And it's kind of refreshing in a way. I mean, you don't really see that very much lately.
Seriously refreshing.
Yeah.
That was the same word I was going to use. Because it's such a human thing. And I know, like, not to like beat the obvious drum about Star Wars, but I feel like, you know, that whatever you want to, like, however you want to summarize the backlash to more recent stuff, and the way that it's been kind of sterile and sexless in juxtaposed with the earlier ones where there were like love triangles and things. It's mm-hmm. like, right. Cause these are, you know, core human things. So it's nice to see stories that like, I mean, that would be, I mean, that's kind of part of everyone's journey on some level. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
And Ian, you mentioned the soundtrack.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a shine some light on that. Cause I thought the soundtrack was amazing.
Oh yeah, Daniel Hart did this. He also did David Lowery's last film, A Ghost Story, which is one of my favorite scores of the last decade, honestly.
I actually haven't seen that movie, but
oh, really good. Yeah. But especially that score, though, so good.
Yeah,
that was the previous film that got my producer Chris really irritated. He's like, but it's I now need to see Ghost Story also.
He oh says yeah,
it's really incredible.
Absolutely. Well, I'll go with my next piece, which is actually The Revenant, the film that won Leonardo DiCaprio his Oscar. You know, another story of survival where any and everything and every person along the journey is just, they're all just obstacles in the way of this character and his journey and his beautiful journey, incredibly shot journey. And, you know, just this strong central performance, which Dev Patel is, you know, he's fantastic in this movie, and he doesn't really get a lot of chances to shine over the years, but he definitely does here. And it just is the kind of movie where this person really has to like go in 100% in that character to yeah. really sell just how difficult this task is that he's been charged with.
That was such a weird experience watching him in this, because I have, you know, he doesn't land on. I have not seen him in much.
Yeah. He doesn't get a lot of opportunities, it seems.
No,
like.
And I was like, man, he's so good in this. And it's not, like you're saying, it's an immersive role, but it's not really a showy role.
Yeah.
Which, you know, maybe that was a choice that, you know, he and the director kind of collaborated on. There obviously, you know, could have been more of like the affected, you know, route to go. But like he, I don't know, it was a really like internal performance.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really interesting because there's so much going on outside of him visually, but he just, so many times during the movie, I was like, man, he looks so old, and I mean that like as a compliment. It was like almost disorienting to see him so grown up.
Yeah.
And playing like a character of that age with such like command and poise so well. Like he just really kind of embodied that role.
Yeah, I think so too.
My brain associates him with, you know, oh, he's, you know, he's in his 20s, you know, he's kind of a younger guy. You know, he kind of gets the bit part, but he was really, really, it was cool to see him kind of up center stage.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he looked really cool at the end with the white beard. Like, he really killed them.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, what do you have next, Ian, for your last piece?
So it's funny, I would say this is going to sound like a weird, like, shameless plug, but Husky Rescue is a Nordic band. They're out of Helsinki, and they did the music for Devil Needs a Fix, and sincerely would have named them even if they had no connection to my short. Again, like the Nordic sensibility of The Green Knight and the score and the way that the sound mix and design and the score relied on kind of like negative space and wind and this really ethereal vibe was like pitch perfect and totally reminded me of this band that I love, you know, where they mix a lot of having never been to like the Nordic countries, but having a romantic idea of it and wanting to go, you know, it's almost like what nature would sound like, you know what I mean? Like this. So they're a folktronica band. So they sort of evolve it to have some structure, but it really, that sort of ethereal otherworldly score and sound mix and design reminded me of Husky Rescue a lot.
Husky Rescue. I'm going to have to look. Did you say folktronica?
They're folktronica, so okay. It's like I'll send you some links. It's a little like singer songwriter meets, I guess there's some folk in there, but to me it's like psychedelic kind of James Bond stuff of the 60s and basically like the 60s meets kind of electronic stuff now, but again like very very European.
Interesting. Oh, yeah. Sounds cool. Well, you know, speaking to that kind of music, I mean, I guess The Northman we've got to look forward to, Robert Eggers' next film, so. Maybe that'll dive into some of this kind of sound as well.
For sure.
Yeah, I want to check the band out. Yeah,
definitely. Well, Sina, what do you have for your last piece?
For my last piece, I want to actually sort of go back to something Ian brought up earlier. I want to name two movies, but under one idea.
Sure.
Because when we were talking about just style and production design and the colors, and I feel like that's one of the, again, because like medieval stuff is really not my thing, but just seeing pictures from this movie and the early trailers, the style is what really gravitated me towards it. And I want to name two movies. One of them is The Void, the 2016 movie.
Sure.
I don't know if you guys have heard of it, but it's by Stephen Kostansky and Jeremy Gillespie. I'm hoping I'm saying their names right. And the Tim Burton movie, Alice in Wonderland.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just felt like a lot of production design choices in The Green Knight, like for example in the castle you have these really weird triangular windows that I'm just like, I don't think that's realistic,
right?
Or I mean, I don't think it's meant to be realistic. It's just like a surreal stylistic modernized take on medieval settings.
Yeah.
And then same thing with the lighting, like everything turns red for like a second in a more dramatized scene, which is why it reminded me of The Void, which is this sort of indie horror film that's also sort of along the lines of visual poetry, but it reminded me of that in terms of its style and lighting. And I mentioned Tim Burton because of it almost felt like a more stylized, modernized Tim Burton style production design.
Yeah.
With elements that are hyper exaggerated and sort of renovated to fit a modern perspective of aesthetics.
Mm-hmm.
And also there's that one character that looks exactly like the Queen in Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, sure.
Do you know what I'm talking about? There's one character, if you look it up, the Alice in Wonderland, Tim Burton, the Queen, there's one character in The Green Knight that looks like 90% like her. And that's why it reminded me of that movie. I don't know if it was a direct reference,
mm-hmm.
But
yeah, I'm not sure of the character name, but yeah, everything, all the choices as far as like design aesthetics are concerned, they all live like just to the right or to the left of normal or of realistic or of like what you would expect it to look like. And, you know, definitely takes a lot of those big chances like a Tim Burton thing would. And The Void, I actually haven't seen, but I've heard really great things about, and I know it's supposed to be a really imaginative piece of horror.
Yeah, it's definitely very cool, like, in terms of it's stylistically, it's very unique more than the story.
Yeah. Well, I'll go to my last piece, which I guess kind of just goes right along with those two, honestly. That's the work of Guillermo del Toro, specifically Pan's Labyrinth, but really across his entire career, a lot of his, you know, again, kind of like with Tim Burton, these like big choices that they land kind of near reality, but off a little bit from that. And then, of course, especially once we start getting into creature design, the Green Knight himself is just, you know, absolutely awesome looking. And a lot of the other, you know, the fox we talked about, the giants are just really, really cool creations. I was also thinking about bringing up Blade Runner 2049 for some of those shots of the giants, just kind of reminded me of that.
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
That's totally.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, they just go all in and huge on design. Design is, I think, like the key idea, like probably, I would have to imagine David Lowery's initial desire to tell this story is to go big on the design choices.
Right. Do we know, I mean, I agree about like the Green Knight, the sound design around his opening scene, the way they bring him into that chamber is in the editing, you know?
Yeah.
Is really incredible. Was that 100% practical, or did they soup that up with VFX at all?
That's a good question. And I don't know the answer. Sina, I don't know if you happen to know.
I thought it was practically done, just at a gut level.
It looks like it, yeah.
But I don't know. But it was really, really impressive.
Yeah.
The thing is, when it's done well in post, it's invisible, so it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, I think that does it as far as puzzle pieces. I'm just going to read down the list real quick of everything we just talked about, and then we'll get into some closing thoughts here. But of course, we got some A24 things in there. We talked about The Witch to start it off. We also talked about Hassan the Bald, Gretel and Hansel, Don Quixote, The Odyssey, Midsommar, The Revenant, The Band Husky Rescue, The Void, Alice in Wonderland, the films of Guillermo del Toro, and we squeeze Blade Runner 2049 in there as well. Of course, Arthurian things run through all of this as well, but the three of us are not experts in those particular kinds of movies, but they're in there, of course, and there's lots of it. I did happen to see an interview with David Lowery where he talked about Willow, actually, as a big influence on this, which I haven't seen since I was a kid.
Yeah. Dang.
Yeah.
That's one of those that, you know, now that you say it, it's like that should have occurred.
Yeah.
That makes so much sense that Willow would be an influence, but I'm like, you haven't seen that probably since the early 90s.
Yeah, exactly. It's now on my watch list for the rest of the year. I definitely want to rewatch it. Like after having seen this movie and loving it, I kind of want to go back and just see how that holds up because yeah, it's been, I don't know, 30 years maybe since the last time.
One last one to throw out that is like a bonus. I think two right around the time of Willow. I feel like they did a couple of Endor movies that were like those made for TV Ewok spinoffs.
Sure.
And when the protagonist goes into the water and it's like, I think it's almost like a shot or two of it being him sort of being encased in ice before he descends, right?
Mm-hmm.
To get the skull. Am I thinking of that right? Wasn't there like an ice that he couldn't get out?
And so I don't really remember those very well. I'm not sure.
Oh, sorry. I mean, in this film,
when he goes into the
water, there's a couple shots of he's sort of like trapped once he's in the water by ice at the surface. Isn't that right? And then he goes deep and there's that all, who knows, but there's very similar scene. And it's funny that he mentioned Willow because also in kind of the late 80s were those Ewok movies that had a super similar kind of sequence like that of being trapped underwater. And
sure.
But who knows?
Yeah. Well, do you guys have any other closing thoughts? Anything we didn't quite get to while going through the puzzle pieces that you wanted to mention about what you liked about The Green Knight?
I've also read the director mention Monty Python and the Holy Grail being one of his general medieval influences in terms of his interest in the style.
I could see that for sure. Yeah.
So I thought it's interesting because it's a completely different genre, but
yeah.
I really liked the, you know, how I don't really know how to describe it, but I guess really like sort of the resolution of the film,
mm-hmm.
you know, that we, I mean, it's almost like this Old Testament, like Ecclesiastes, like, you know, we watch him go through the, like the life he almost have, and then he makes a different choice, mm-hmm. like a very miserable life based on his old criteria of success. I was really engaged in the whole film, but I really like, you know, I guess for some people, they know the source material and there's no surprises, but me not knowing the source material, I really liked the way that he kind of handled the treatment of that.
Mm.
And then went back to the protagonist, you know, facing death with the Green Knight. And then kind of the delivery of the line of the Green Knight of like, cool, well done, you know, right as it cuts to black.
Yeah.
I don't know. I find myself like thinking about that since I saw it on Sunday.
Yeah.
Because you spend so much time, you know, like actual running time with this protagonist trying to attain something. And then the director does a really good job of showing you, you know, almost that like adage of like, be careful what you ask for, you might get it.
Right.
And just like the amount of time that you spend, I don't know, an hour and 40 to 50 chasing something and then to kind of get it all so quickly and see how horrible it is.
Yeah.
I really dug that. I thought that was a cool, thought it was like kind of well handled there.
Yeah. And it's a hard ending to pull off, I think, without like kind of getting a groan eye roll kind of thing, you know, with like, oh, that was fake. You know, you could see yourself losing an audience by trying to pull off that kind of an ending. But I really think, like you said, it's handled really well. And it kind of gives you that point while also, you know, getting to where it's actually meant to go by the end.
Right. And I think a lot of that, like you were saying, the makeup, you know, how good he looked really aged, and Dev Patel's performance, like at any age in that, was just like, he was just really, really, really good.
Yeah.
So he helped sell that whole almost montage at the end.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling the ending might have been changed a lot because apparently it was supposed to premiere at South by Southwest in 2020.
Right.
And that was canceled. And at the time, David Lowery hated the movie, from what I read. So he took 6 months to re-edit it to kind of get to a point where he was satisfied with the movie.
Wow. And
I feel like that style of ending, it might have come out in that process. That's my speculation. But
well, that's really interesting because I just read a headline, again, not knowing this director as much as I should, that, you know, he said he basically almost gave up filmmaking
mm-hmm.
during the yeah. pandemic. And like the quote in the headline was, it was a very existential year. I mean, that's a really existential ending.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it sucks to lose, but it can kind of suck to succeed. You know what I mean? Like, what's it all mean?
Sure.
So you, Sina, you might be like right on the money. Like that might've grown out of, because I need to read that article, but yeah, I was just saying he kind of was ready to give up filmmaking.
Yeah, there's a parallel in his own filmmaking career there.
I have to assume, I'm not a filmmaker, I compose music for film, but I have to assume that after making a film, but then due to very strange circumstances like a pandemic, having 6 months to sit and tinker with it must make you hate the process of making films like so much. I just can't imagine that being a positive experience.
I mean, for me, it was, I think for me it was more positive because I had two short films that have been in post-production hell for so long.
Yeah.
And just having some time off from the world, just sit with them and figure them out. I was able to get them done. So,
yeah. Well, that's good.
I had a positive experience. But, yeah.
Awesome. Well, this was great, guys. Thank you so much for joining me to talk about The Green Knight. Ian, why don't you tell people where they can find you and your work?
My website, brokentelegraph.com. And then, you know, it'll link out to my first film, From the Sky, an Arabic language film about essentially the war on terror in the Middle East and drone strikes and all that kind of stuff. It also has a link to The Devil Needs a Fix, all of them for free on Vimeo. And White Action News, which was a zero budget satirical web series that we did during the pandemic. But yeah, that's probably the best spot. Broken Telegraph will lead everybody to all the links.
Awesome. And Sina, where can we find you?
I post pretty much all my work on my website, sinadolati.com. That's sinadolati.com. And also I try to stay engaged on my Instagram, which is also my name, sinadolati, and then an underscore, sinadolati underscore. You know, I try to share, like, you know, resources. I'm going to start doing some article writing as well. But yeah, my website and my Instagram. And Terminal Love is also available on YouTube. On my website, there is a big thumbnail that the film can be found at.
Perfect. Well, guys, thank you again so much. And if either of you ever want to come back and join me for another episode, I'd love to have you back sometime.
Cool. Thank you, David. That was really fun.
Thanks, David. Thanks for having
us. And good to talk to you again, Sina.
Yeah, nice talking to you too. And thanks, David, for having us.
I'm Josh Bell.
And I'm Jason Harrison. We co-host a podcast called Awesome Movie Year.
Each season, we take a look back at an awesome year for movies, which is every year.
We deep dive into these specific years and we pick out why they were such great years for films. We go over the biggest hits, the biggest flops, the best picture, some personal picks, some cult classics.
Years we've covered in past seasons include 1994, 2003, 1977, and 1984, and we've got all of film history to look forward to. So check us out at awesomemovieyear.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about The Green Knight. Make sure to go check out those guys' films as well as The Green Knight. You can find links in the show notes, of course. And yeah, thank you everybody for joining us on this episode. It is so great to have so many listeners out there. We have been getting a ton of new downloads, a lot of new subscribers. It's just awesome. I love that there are people out there listening to the show, and I love making the show, and I'm going to keep making this show. So definitely make sure you're subscribed wherever it is you listen to podcasts, because lots of episodes coming your way. And if you do like what we do here, you should rate and review us. You can do that on Apple Podcasts, on Podchaser. A new one is Good Pods. There's some other apps I believe you can leave reviews for podcasts on. If where you listen, you can leave reviews, do it there. But those are kind of the big ones, I think, right now. But make sure you're subscribed. If you really like the show, share it. Also, follow us on social media at PiecingPod. Join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And, you know, we do have a Patreon. If you really love what we're doing here, you should check out the Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where I post bonus content from this podcast, advanced content from this podcast, also stuff from my music career. I've got a couple albums in the works right now, including two already completed soundtracks from films I worked on. So a lot of stuff coming soon. It will be hitting the Patreon first before it comes out anywhere else. Some of it's actually only going to be on the Patreon, like completely exclusive stuff. So lots of music career stuff happening over there. Also, the other movie podcast that I produce, Awesome Movie Year, between seasons, they always do a bonus episode, and it will be for the length of the entire next season exclusively on the Patreon. So that's for like a few months in advance. So right now they have an episode on the 2003 film Old Boy, but there will be a bonus episode for the 1967 season coming in just a few weeks. So yeah, check it out. Lots of great content over there. Produced by David Rosen. It's patreon.com/bydavidrosen. So we always close out these episodes with a piece of music. And like I was just saying about that soundtrack stuff, I actually, earlier this year, scored a feature film called Inexistent, which is currently in the film festival phase. And actually, at the time of this episode, this weekend, we'll be playing here in Las Vegas at the Las Vegas Premier Film Festival at the Galaxy Boulevard Theater. I am definitely going to go check it out. I'm really excited to see the film with an audience, and you know, just getting to see the film completed really is awesome enough, even without an audience. But it's going to be especially great to see it with some people and on the big screen. And I'm really proud of the work I did on this film. And I don't know when everyone else is going to get to see it. You know, it's currently doing the festival rounds, and I'm sure they're working on trying to get distribution and all that. Once I do know, you'll find out. But also, once it's out there for the rest of the world to see, I have completed work on turning the score into a soundtrack album, and that will be one of my future albums. It will eventually come out as its own standalone release. And I'm going to close this out with a piece of music from that. How about that? This is a piece of music from the film score. It's called Visions of Us is the name of the track. It comes somewhere towards the middle of the film, just as things are starting to fall apart for our main character. But I'm not going to give away any spoilers, of course. When the movie comes out, you will see it, and maybe we'll talk about it here on the show. But yeah, so this is from Inexistent, which... if you're in Las Vegas and you're hearing this on the Friday that it comes out, you should come to the film festival, the Las Vegas Premier Film Festival. It's this Saturday at 12:30 in the afternoon. But if not, just enjoy the track. We'll be back with more Piecing It Together coming real soon.
An All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.